from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point in Charlotte, North Carolina, with the Democrats' big week, their national convention. They got hammered every which way by Republicans last week in Tampa. President Obama, most of all, nice guy, but he's failed the country, they said, speech after speech, hammering away at his handling of the economy, healthcare, jobs. Now it's President Obama's turn to make his case to the nation. This hour on Point, we're raising the curtain in Charlotte. You can join the conversation. What will you be listening for this week? How do you see the Democrats' challenge? You can comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. President Obama revved up and ready to go. Here he was yesterday in Toledo, Ohio, poking at last week's Republican convention in Tampa.
Despite all the challenges that we face in this new century, we saw three straight days of an agenda out of the last century. It was a rerun. You might as well have watched it on black and white TV with some rabbit ears on there.
The president in Toledo. We're coming to you today from the bustling Time Warner Cable Arena in Charlotte. Beautiful Charlotte, I should say. We're just over my shoulder. Michelle Obama will address the hall tonight, and we've got a great crew with us. Brian Monroe, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and editor of CNNPolitics.com is here. Hey, Brian, good to see you again.
Great to be here.
Margaret Taleb, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News is here. Hello, Margaret. Great to see you.
It's great to see you also.
Howard Fineman, editorial director of AOL Huffington Post Media Group, joins us. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you there. And right now, from the Democratic Party, Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland is here, ranking Democratic member of the House Budget Committee, chaired by Paul Ryan, and a big party frontman this season, pushing back on the GOP. Congressman Van Hollen, thanks so much for being here.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
So the president says the Republicans' convention in Tampa looked like an agenda out of the last century. For a lot of Americans, the last century doesn't look so bad compared to this one so far.
It depends on whether you look at the 8 years of the Bush administration or you go back to the 1990s and the Clinton years. Obviously, during the Clinton years, he took a struggling economy. We had 20 million jobs created and balanced our budget because he invested in our middle class and he took a balanced approach to deficit reduction. Then we had the trickle-down theory of economics, which says you provide people like Mitt Romney another round of tax cuts. And it didn't work. It crashed the economy. The deficit went through the roof. The president took an economy in free fall. He stopped the free fall. He turned the corner. And the choice going forward now is, do you want to go back to this failed strategy that we know crashed the economy and raised the deficit? Or do you want to go back to a strategy that invests in our middle class, which makes sure that students get the education and training they need, that we invest in our infrastructure, and we take a balanced approach to reducing the deficit? Because if you don't ask for one more penny from folks like Mitt Romney, it means you hit everybody else harder. Seniors on Medicare and investments in our future.
What about the Republicans' message last week? People heard it. Many tuned in. Many did not. But this is the reality of conventions these days. Many did, or at least got the headlines. And Republicans said, under Obama, opportunity going away. Under Obama, individuals, not free to pursue their destiny. Under Obama, we haven't had this sort of all hold hands and make something new happen that the president promised. What did you make of the messages from the GOP?
Well, first of all, the messages from the GOP were all negative. In other words, they were just attacking President Obama. They really don't want to tell the American people about their plan, about the Romney-Ryan plan, because what it does is provide, again, another round of these tax breaks for people like Mitt Romney at the expense of everybody else. Whereas what the president has said is, let's invest in the middle class. Now, they said, the president's going to take away people's individual liberty. That is obviously nonsense. The president's made clear he believes in the free market. He believes in the engine of opportunity. But he also believes that one of the reasons we became the greatest economic power on earth was that we made important investments in our economy. They talked a lot about Neil Armstrong at their conventions. They should. But their budget would not invest in major national enterprises like trying to put a man on the moon. Look, this country is great because people have the freedom to pursue their dreams, but it's also great because we believe the American dream should be available to everybody, and that just because you get a head start in life doesn't mean you should be cut in line, that everybody should have a chance.
Republicans saying last week, great, but it's been available to nobody is kind of the message. The economy's been so bad that everybody's been in the soup. And their message is, whatever the president's done hasn't worked. You know, you got a choice now. So what's your challenge to push back on that message this week and turn it toward the Obama? I mean, what can he tell the American people that he'll do in another 4 years that he wasn't able to do in the first 4 years?
Well, you asked two questions there, because he had to spend the first 4 years stopping the economy from free fall and turning the corner. Because remember, 800,000 Americans were losing their jobs every month. A third of Americans' retirement security had collapsed at that point in time. If we'd listen to Mitt Romney, he was right up there to rescue the guys on Wall Street. He was for that. But he said to the auto manufacturers and American manufacturing, forget it. You can go bankrupt. If we'd taken their privatization of Social Security plan, those retirement savings, there would have been nothing left. So, look, the president has turned the corner. We've had 29 months of positive economic job growth. People's retirement savings are now ahead of where they were when the president took office. And so now's the next step. And the president says the next step means pursuing the kind of approach that we saw work during the Clinton years, updated for the 21st century, focusing on things like clean energy, focusing on other important investments. But by goodness, why would we go back to a strategy we failed? And talking about that Bush strategy, it's not about the past. This is not about looking in the rearview mirror. This is about what Romney and Ryan are proposing for the future. They want to just take a U-turn back to those policies.
Your colleague, congressional colleague on the Budget Committee, Paul Ryan, saying over the weekend, asking, are you better off, Americans, than you were 4 years ago? And the supposition of that is that people are not. Now, people are not in great shape, but what do you say to that question?
Well, they're not in great shape, but they are no doubt better off, because at that point in time, 800,000 Americans were losing their job every month. Right now, people are getting back to work, not at the pace we want. But the issue is 29 months of straight positive sector job growth. Let's continue working, and the president's put forward a plan, and he's going to talk more about that. He takes a balanced approach to dealing with the deficits rather than one that guts important investments that are needed to make the economy grow. And so when you listen to Paul Ryan and those folks, they're relying on a collective case of amnesia from the American people. The reality is people's retirement accounts had gone down by one-third. Now they're above where they were.
Let me throw you to my news media lions here, Margaret, Brian, Howard. Howard, what are you thinking as you hear Congressman Chris Van Hollen make the case, and he's making it all over these days for the Democrats? What do you want to put to him about this week and what the Democrats' challenge is, Howard?
Well, to be somewhat facetious, it sounds like it's George W. Bush and Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And I think the Democrats, including Chris, are counting on the collective sales ability of that team versus the record of the other team. I think it's a valid point if you look at the totality of things. And I think also that Chris did a better job of explaining the answer to the question of are you better off than his colleagues did over the weekend. I also think here in Tampa that the people are, so far, I think, in a better mood than I expected them to be. It's going to be a tough election race, but people here seem pretty fired up, which is a good sign for the president.
Margaret, what do you see as the Democrats' big challenge this week? Here's Chris Van Hollen. He's out there talking. What should be put to him about what they need to get over this week?
It seems to me that the lineup of speakers is at first to turn out minority support and women's support, and then finally with President Clinton to work on white voters, middle-class voters. And I guess I'm wondering, why do you think President Obama has had such a challenge with especially male white voters? And do you think that President Clinton will necessarily help him, or do you think that it will just make some of those hesitant voters reminisce about a different Democrat and not President Obama?
Congressman?
Well, first of all, the president in 2008 put together a great coalition of voters. He got a good vote from independent voters. I should just remind people, he did not win white male voters back in 2008.
And yet he won.
But what the president wants to do, and I think, you know, President Clinton will do this, and of course President Obama will do this, is talk about how his proposal for the future will help empower middle class and working families. And I think, you know, going back to this point I made, Mitt Romney was right there all for rescuing Wall Street. Okay, those were tough decisions we all had to make as a country. But when it came time to rescue middle class families, when it came time to rescue the auto industry and American manufacturing? His answer was, let Detroit go bankrupt. So let's listen to their plan. I mean, their plan is to give people like Mitt Romney another round of tax breaks, and that will come out of the hides of everybody else if you're serious about dealing with the budget deficit, as we should be.
Brian Monroe, do you hear a successful pushback to last week's big song from the GOP in Chris's take?
Well, Tom, if you remember, when we were sitting here last week, or actually sitting
Tampa.
In Tampa
yeah.
last week,
yeah.
Their mood and their tone was all about attack, attack, attack. Look how bad President Obama has messed this up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's time for us to step in and take back the White House. I think this week, the candidate and the party have to change the conversation a little bit. It cannot.
It can't just be defend.
No,
it's
not a defend. It's not even refreshing the last 4 years and look at all the things he's done to save the
mm-hmm.
Auto industry and healthcare and his litany on his resume. If that's all he does, that's not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think the American people are hungry now for someone to reframe the conversation, to reboot. And just like Ronald Reagan did with Morning in America, I think that President Obama has a challenge where he has to say, here's what we're going to do for the next 4 years.
Help us look forward again. Brian Monroe with CNNPolitics.com. Margaret Tollef with Bloomberg News White House correspondent there. Howard Fineman with Huffington Post. Congressman Chris Van Hollen, it's great to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Charlotte, North Carolina, raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention, asking what Barack Obama needs to do this week to keep his job, to lead the country. Margaret Tollef is with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Howard Fineman is with us from AOL Huffington Post Media Group, editorial director there, author of The 13 American Arguments. Brian Monroe, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and editor at CNNPolitics.com is here. Here was Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney's running mate yesterday at a campaign rally in Greenville, North Carolina, had some harsh criticism for President Obama's record and raised that 4 years ago issue.
When you take a look at what we're going to hear in Charlotte today, the president can say a lot of things, and he will, but he can't tell you that you're better off. Simply put, the Jimmy Carter years look like the good old days compared to where we are right now.
Paul Ryan, you're going to bring back Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan there. Vice President Joe Biden in Detroit, having none of it hit back here, defended the Obama administration's record.
Folks, let me make something clear and say it to the press. America is better off today than they left us when they left.
Joe Biden in Detroit. So, Howard, here we are. You're saying before the break, you think that what they've got to do is do more than point out what happened in the first term. They've got to look forward and say, what are we going to do now? Brian, like what? Do you see something up the president's sleeve? Does he have a big new vision? Is it what comes after hope and change?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, if you will. You know, 4 years ago, and we talked about this, how there was the expectations for an Obama administration and Obama presidency were so high, he almost had to walk on water, and then even then, it wouldn't have been enough. So this time, in some ways, he's going to benefit from a little bit lower expectations.
Really? Because those expectations weren't just whistling. A lot of people had somewhere in a corner of their heart that this might change the chemistry in this country, might get us out of the box of polarization. That was his promise, wasn't it?
That indeed was. And, you know, and this gets back to the argument of, you know, can he spend this day and this week defending the last 4 years? He can only get so far saying, well, look, the Republicans wouldn't cut me any slack. They, you know, blocked everything we did the first day of his inauguration. They huddled together to plan how to unseat him. Okay, we got that. Now what? And that's the question going to be now what? These next 4 years, someone, and it's got to really be him if he wants to take this job back, has to articulate what these next 4 years are going to look like. What's the country going to look like? What's America's place in the world going to look like?
Howard, do you see a big now what coming from the president?
Well, I think he has to have it. I think the record is too mixed for him to spend his days here in Charlotte merely in the defense of it, or merely in attacks on the Republicans. I think in 2008 he had a narrative. We talk about a lot about that covering politics, a story. And the story was how he personally, given his own life history, could bring something unique to taking the country to the next good place. He needs another narrative. And this one is not a personal one. It's not really about his biography. Remember last time it was about his biography and what that
sure.
showed about what the country could be.
Mm-hmm.
I think he needs a new one, and I think what he needs is to say and to explain how his vision of how the economy works, which is different from the Republicans, is the right one for the future. And I think that's possible. I haven't really heard it yet, but what it is that in the 21st century, cooperation, research, globalization, multiculturalism, education are the things that are going to create jobs. That the jobs of the future are knowledge jobs and ones that come from interconnection and cooperation. I'm in the media, web business now, and I know this. You don't win on the web by cutting the other people out. You win it by connecting to other people, by sharing traffic. And I'd like to hear something like that from the president to explain to middle class people who are undecided and reluctant to vote for him why his vision of how the economy works will help them and their children. In some cases, it's too late for the parents.
Boy,
for their children, and I haven't heard that expressed succinctly, and I think he needs to do it.
I'm going to put that to Margaret Tullev. I can just hear the kind of chortling you might have heard at the GOP convention last week about multiculturalism being an engine for the economy. There was a much more, maybe the president had it right, 20th century style, let's go, just straight ahead, compete. Here was the president, this again yesterday in Toledo, Labor Day crowd of union workers at a campaign rally there. He was talking about the speech that he has coming up this Thursday night, not in Denver, not in 08, but in 12 in Charlotte.
On Thursday night, I'm going to offer you what I believe is a better path forward. A path that's going to grow this economy and create more good jobs and strengthen the middle class.
President Obama in Toledo. Okay, Margaret, a better path forward. A, do you see it? Does he have it up his sleeve? Is it something he has not articulated exactly to date? And B, if he's got it, can he, this president, in a second term, get it through? We saw an awful lot of stonewalling. And, I mean, he got some big stuff through, but there was a lot of going nowhere with Republicans this time out.
Well, they're both great questions. And we had a breakfast this morning with Jim Messina and Stephanie Cutter, the campaign manager and deputy campaign manager for the Obama campaign. And what they told us is that President Obama will be more specific than Romney in his convention speech, that he will put some meat on the bone. While there will be an aspirational element to the speech, he will get into more nitty-gritty on deficit reduction specifically they mentioned. But when pressed, they wouldn't actually tell us anything. So,
well, they're not going to give away the goods, but then are the goods there?
Well, and so you don't know until you hear it. So is he going to delineate, Simpson Bowles 2.0, or is it going to be, again, sort of more rhetoric that they will then say counts as more meat on the bone without actually telling us anything? We don't know. We're very interested to hear, how much will he mix aspirational, good feeling, some of the drama of 08 with what would track with what the campaign has been, which is more pragmatic, more economy focused, less the dream and more the reality.
Well, I mean, economy better be somewhere big in there. Howard Brown, I want to come to you for a little more on the GOP critique last week, but let's get our listeners in here. Lots of them on the line here. We are in Charlotte, the Democratic National Convention. Hello to all of our Charlotte listeners. It's great to be with you this morning. You've got a very beautiful city here. Let's get to Evansville, Indiana. Kyle is calling. Hi, Kyle. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty well. What do you think, Kyle? What do the Democrats need to do this week?
I was like I was telling the gentleman on the phone, I was too young to vote for Obama in the last election, but I did volunteer for his campaign. And I would submit that I am way better off than I was under a Bush presidency, and I will continue to be better off than I will be under a Romney presidency.
Why? How?
All I'd like to hear is truth. You have people like Paul Ryan touting a GM plant that closed and how that's all Obama's fault. That plant did not close under Obama's presidency. The reality is, with health care reform, I'm going to have better health care coverage than I could afford on my own under a family policy. I've seen people around me that under any other circumstances would not have had the opportunity to go to college, that are now going to college, that are now becoming part of that middle class that the elitists and the CEOs in the Republican Party want to completely destroy and deteriorate. And
hey, Kyle, Kyle, let me ask, how old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
Do you have a job?
Yes, sir.
Hey, is it a good enough job for your age and place and time?
Absolutely.
Huh. Oh, all right. A happy camper in Evansville, Indiana, and more of the same, please, Mr. President. Kyle, thanks for your call. Let me get one more right here from West Palm Beach, Florida. Elizabeth is calling. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah.
One thing I'd like to see the Democratic Party get across, and something I'm sorry to say I think they've somewhat failed on, is exactly how much he has managed to accomplish in a really decisive government right now. I was profoundly affected in a positive way by the Economic Recovery Act, but many of my independent and even Republican friends were unaware of all these things that practically saved my family during the economic downturn.
You're saying the stimulus saved your family. How did the stimulus save your family, Elizabeth? How?
We both, actually, my husband and I, with under 1 year old and me expecting our second child, lost our jobs of over a decade shortly after the Recovery Act was enacted. It allowed the extended unemployment while I tried to search with a baby on the way, which no matter what they say, people are not anxious to hire you. And him trying to find something in a specialized scientific background market, it allowed us to continue to search as well as be able to actually afford COBRA, which greatly helped.
Elizabeth, if I may I ask you, last week the Republicans said, I can just imagine them picking up your comment right there and saying, look, Elizabeth, what we would do for you is not give you unemployment insurance and COBRA, we would give you a job. What do you think?
Well, we did get jobs, so we don't require them now. We were able to get them, and fortunately able now to support our family.
And
these things I couldn't see have occurring as well as they did under a different leadership.
Got it. So in its way, it worked for you. And one more, Savannah, Georgia. Emily's calling. Emily, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to kind of underscore a couple of things together. Callers and commentators said, and that has to do with a challenge I think the Democrats have in the convention this week. It's to point out and underscore how much the Republicans in Congress were obstructionists in a lot of the positive things President Obama wanted to do. And yet do that without dwelling on that and without seeming like you're looking at the past being overly negative. But I think one of the other callers who just was on about the positive, actually the last two, the positive from the stimulus, that highlights an opportunity for the Democrats in terms of putting in front of the convention and in front of viewers some of the people who have benefited and who are, in fact, better off and or hopeful. I have a friend in South Carolina who has been a big Republican for years, but she is liking Obama now because she saw, as a small business owner, a change in the take-home pay for employees we're getting, and saw that as somebody who understood the right way to make the economy grow. So I think the Democrats need to emphasize that and put those real people out there and to counter the Republicans' sort of wealth by association strategy.
Hey, Emily, we've got it. Margaret, is it enough to put real people out? I mean, we see that at every State of the Union. There's somebody sitting up there, whether it's Michelle Obama or Lauren Bush. Is it enough to put real people out when the unemployment rate is what it is?
Real people do help make the case. The question this week, however, is using major national figureheads that people are familiar with to successfully hit the targets that they need to hit. Latinos for turnout, women for turnout, and any swing women who haven't made up their mind, and working and middle class white people.
Brian, what about Emily says go after GOP obstruction during the Obama years? I mean, how much can he talk about that? Because if he couldn't get over that in his first term, how's he going to get over that in his second term?
You know, he's got to assume that is just going to be the carpeting from now on. That if he spends too much time, he's got to acknowledge it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But if he spends too much time dwelling on that, he's on his heels instead of on his toes. He's got to be on his toes and aggressively articulating the next 4 years. You know, the other criticism that he's been hit, and you know, there are lots of criticisms, particularly from the GOP, mm-hmm. that have been really off base. This morning we had Amy Kramer from the Tea Party, on the Tea Party Express, on the air, and she was defending the accusation that President Obama doesn't love America, which is ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. They may disagree about some issues. But one
how does she say?
You have to go back and watch CNN. It was baffling. Okay. But one criticism that has stuck is that if you listen to the narrative that President Obama, or at the time, Karen Obama, was articulating 4 years ago, it was an I narrative. It was about his history, his story, how he's come, and what he wants to do. He now has to shift that to a we narrative, that it's about we as a country, what we are going to do, how we are going to go forward. And if you listen closely to a lot of his speeches, that's a pivot that it's uncomfortable for him. He sees, by saying I, he's taking responsibility, he's taking ownership, it's what he's going to do or has done or will do. But we is a much harder conversation for him.
Well, I mean, Howard, how does he do that? I remember him, you know, talking about we are the change. I mean, there was we there as well. But
yeah, there was. And that's what I was saying, is that he does need a new narrative, and it does. Mm-hmm. And I agree that it's a good way to think of it as a shift from I to we. But I also think that the Republicans left him an opening. I thought when they nominated Paul Ryan, and when they put Paul Ryan forth as the first Gen Xer on a ticket, the age of 42, that Ryan was going to be able to steal the future from the Democratic Party. They were going to argue that they were the sons of Jack Kemp and Ayn Rand, if you will, that they believed in the power of the free market, and that was the cool, young, future-oriented thing. And they were going to try to paint Barack Obama as the defender of the status quo, as the defender of the welfare state, to shorthand it. But I think they didn't go that direction, because the day after Paul Ryan, Mitt Romney kind of took us back to the 50s, and Clint Eastwood took us who knows where.
Right.
And I do think that the Democrats still have the opportunity to be the party of the future. They can say, and they're trying this, they're trying mm-hmm. to say that, you know, as Barack Obama said yesterday, you know, you could have watched the Republican convention on a black and white TV, et cetera. Those are fun lines. Those are one-liners. He has to explain convincingly why his program, as specifically as he's going to put it out, and his vision are better ones for the future, for your family, for you and for your children. I think he's got to put it forward even farther, that toward the future, toward the children. And if he can do that, he'll escape here. And I've also been told that they have told other people who've complained about the lack of a second term agenda, stay tuned for the convention, because you're going to hear more at the convention. Now, if that's an empty promise, people are going to be upset within the party. But if the president can deliver on some of that credibly, I think that'll be very helpful.
We've got a lot of callers to get to after the break, but this issue of painting a long-term vision for America, on the one hand, we all know the country needs that. On the other, unemployment for a lot of people is right now. Pain for a lot of people, Margaret, is right now. Can he look long-term and win people who go into the polls after some years that haven't been easy?
Right, so the Republican criticism is, or the Republican sort of rhetoric has been, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And it's something that the Obama campaign has been reluctant to address head-on TV and such. Again, what Stephanie Cutter told us today was Americans may not feel it in their own lives, but that they would make the case that the country is better off for the work against Al-Qaeda, the economy, healthcare, and so on.
Absolutely better off is the word she puts on it, just the opposite from the GOP. Margaret Tolove, Howard Fineman, Brian Monroe, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Charlotte, North Carolina, raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Charlotte, North Carolina, raising the curtain on the Democratic National Convention, asking what Barack Obama, the president, needs to do this week to keep his job, to lead the country. Margaret Tolove is with us, White House correspondent for Bloomberg News. Brian Monroe is here, editor at CNNPolitics.com. Howard Fineman of AOL Huffington Post is here. Here was Mitt Romney before he went boating yesterday on Labor Day. He was in Cincinnati, said that President Obama has broken his promise on jobs.
One of the promises he made was he was going to create more jobs. And today, 23 million people are out of work or stopped looking for work or underemployed. Let me tell you, if you have a coach that's 0 and 23 million, you say it's time to get a new coach.
Zero and 23 million. Is this another one of those numbers? I don't know. There's a little more than zero. It's not 23 million. Fair enough. President Obama's Stephanie Cutter, deputy campaign manager, was saying yesterday on NBC's Today show, the country's absolutely better off, she said, than 4 years ago. Not everybody would agree, but here was her reckoning.
Let me just walk you through what life was like 4 years ago right now. In the 6 months before the president was elected, we lost 3.5 million jobs. Wages have been going down for a decade. The auto industry was on the brink of failure. Our financial system, we were, you know, this is just about the time we were seeing banks go under. And all over America, middle-class families were feeling it. And they've been feeling it for over a decade.
She went on to say that the Obama administration created 4.5 million private sector jobs. Auto industry bounced back to number one. She said wages starting to come back over the last year. We've got lots of response online here. Lisa says, what does she want from this Democrats, the Democrats convention? Plans, direction, vision, rising above, name calling. Bridget says, please let them show some integrity in class. Please let them not descend into freakish frat boy mob mentality. Jennifer says, I'd love to see Betty White talking to an empty chair. Okay. What, free-minded Americans? Kurt wants 50 chihuahua, giant chihuahuas eating Republicans. I don't know. Facebook, you know, you get everything. Gautam wants a 30-point bump for Democrats. Mitt didn't get that. I don't know about Barack. Chris wants the true spirit of America that lives in us. There's more than one sense these days of what that is. You know, there's Mitt Romney talking about 23 million jobs not created, zero to 23 million. There's been a lot of talk, Brian, about last week and misrepresentation of facts. Where do you come down on that?
You know, we had our entire CNN Fact Check squad go over all last week's comments, and, you know, whether it's 23 million or 12 million or 18 million, what the time frame is. You know, some of the things that Paul Ryan said about the plant in Wisconsin that closed or not closed, mm-hmm. or when it closed. There's a lot of fuzzy stuff. And I can guarantee you we'll have that same fact check team pouncing this week, because there's a lot of room for, I don't know, fuzzing the numbers and the facts in both these conversations. But, you know, it's going to come down to, again, the recast of the narrative. And you heard some of your mm-hmm. your callers and your readers respond saying they're looking for sort of hope 2.0. Mm-hmm. They're looking mm-hmm. for what the next step for this country will be. And whether everyone can articulate it just right, that's going to be the challenge.
Howard, you know, David Brooks looks at this week and says Obama needs a new elevator speech, a new sort of 30-second pitch on what he stands for, and it's got to be big. He says, you know, choose something. Make it about global warming and really going after that, or make it about broken capitalism and really changing, fixing that, or make it about the budget. Bowles, Simpson, go back and embrace something like that, something huge and specific. Do you anticipate that, Howard, or will it be broad talk about, you know, new century, new requirements?
Well, it's not going to be global warming, I don't think. It's got to be things that make sense. I mean, I have this vision in my head of a working single mom in someplace in Ohio who's sitting there and is really busy and is skeptical about the president. She may have voted for him last time, but she's had a hard time making ends meet. And she's taking time off and putting her feet up and listening, saying, okay, I'm going to listen to President Obama. What is he going to say to me? What is he going to say to me that gives me hope, that first of all explains why he didn't do better and gives me hope for my family for the next 4 years and for their future, for my children's future? I think he's got to get somewhat specific, because there's a misnomer about swing voters at the end, that they don't know very much and they're all emotional and they vote on personality and so on. I think in this case, especially, that's not correct. I think they would like something to hang on to, something specific. And as I say, I think it should be about why his conception of how the economy works is the future and Mitt Romney's is the past. But it's got to have some specifics on it.
Is that near enough term, Howard?
He will help. Yeah.
Americans can look into the distance, but that single mom who needs a job is going to be looking right now,
right,
as well. I mean,
is
that tangible enough for her?
And she has to know what he has done, and there are some things he's done that can be of help to her if they haven't already been of help to her, and then give a couple other specifics of how he can help in the future. I think that's the person he's addressing. To me, that's the person he's addressing, and all the rest is noise.
You know, Howard, last week the Republicans were saying, come on, we know how this is done. This is America. Let loose the bulls of free enterprise and this economy can charge again. Which message do you think that single mom, or you pick your voter, Howard, she's going to go for?
That's a false dichotomy. Barack Obama's got to explain that he's every bit as much for a thriving economy as a private market economy as anybody else. That there's a better, smarter way to do it than by just cutting taxes and trickle-down economics. That's not the best way to do it. And Bill Clinton showed that, and we, the Democrats, can show that again.
Let's get our listeners right here. Dan in Watertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I would really love to see Obama and the Democrats take issue with Mitt Romney's comment in his keynote speech that Obama wants to stop the oceans from rising and heal the planet. I will help you. And what he's really saying there is that he will not allow clean air, clean water, clean energy, or the fate of other species to get in the way of individual and corporate profit. I think there's a real opportunity there to take the discourse away from the selfish individualism of how much am I going to make from which president, back to those programs like healthcare and the environment that are about the collective good. I think Americans are bigger than individual selfishness, and Obama has a real opportunity to point out what I really think is the gluttony of the Romney program of what he wants to move forward. And as an example, what happened in New Orleans recently, that would have been another calamity because Romney would have never supported the subsidized levees that really saved the city despite the bad flooding from 20 inches of rain. They would have never funded that, which came from the stimulus program. That's healing the planet. And Mitt Romney does not understand that. This is a guy who's got a belief system that involves Armageddon, and we can't talk about the religious part of it in his story, but it's a real part of his story. I've read the Book of Mormon.
Lots of people have Armageddon out there, but Dan, let me take up the heart of what you're raising here. Brian Monroe, Mitt Romney, he did make a big choice. At the climax, the closing remarks of his speech, he mocked the notion of a president who cared about healing the planet and stopping global warming and said, look, I'm going to take care of your family. Now, that's a big tell about his assessment of Americans' priorities. But is he right or wrong? People who are worried about their family and buying clothes for the kids to go back to school and putting groceries on the table next week, are they ready for somebody who they think is going to go straight to that and, you know, the rest is kind of fal-de-rol?
Well, you know, I think that President Obama has to acknowledge and have empathy for all those families. In this hall today, just about everyone in there, and probably everyone at this table, either has been unemployed, has a family member who's been unemployed, has a neighbor or a cousin or a best friend.
In these last years, everybody knows somebody.
It has been for real. Mm-hmm. I think now the country is ready to go, okay, we get it, now let's get out of it. Let's get on to the next phase of this country. Let's get the jobs. Let's get the housing market, which is starting to come back. And I think, you know,
so is it set aside the planet and all the rest and just
that,
to...
That will come in, you know, because you look at who he is in his default setting. Mm-hmm. Obama is, I've known him for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. And at his heart, he is a shy, introverted, highly competitive policy wonk.
Okay.
And he will, if he goes too deep, you know, Howard was talking about the specifics. He does need to lay out specifics, but if he goes too deep down the path of policy and numbers, he's going to lose a lot of people. It's got to be some piece of that, but he has to stay high.
Stay high. What do you think, Margaret? Does Obama turn that around on Mitt Romney? Does he say, hey, we got to heal the planet, we got to stop the oceans rising, and we'll bring your economy back? Or is the economy too close to Americans' throats to really be moved by that right now, that swing voter, that single mom?
It's more the latter than the former. President Obama always talks about these grand sweeping things, the general broad philosophical differences, the environment, education, blah, blah.
Yep.
But what his aides are telling us now in the lead up to this speech is that they think Romney talked too much to the delegates in the room at the Republican convention, and that President Obama does not want to make what he sees as a mistake by Romney with his own crowd, that he needs to be talking to people watching on TV, to undecided voters, and that it is really an economic-focused message. Now, Mrs. Obama will make the case for kind of the heart behind the man or his motivation and all that stuff. Julian Castro will make...
I love you, women.
Right, exactly. Julian Castro will make the case for... why other minorities can aspire the way President Obama aspired to meritocracy.
San Antonio mayor, the keynote speaker tonight.
The other Harvard Law graduate with a bright future who's young. Clinton will make the case that the economy can be what it was during his time, but it is President Obama's job to make the case for what he would do in a second term, and that focus, to the extent that he gets into specifics, will be about the economy, deficit reduction.
Iowa City, Iowa. Troy is calling. Hi, Troy. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, Tom. I would like him to explain why gay marriage is good for the United States and why we should look forward into the future where gay men can use the women's bathroom and shower.
So you're being facetious here. You're criticizing the president's support for gay marriage, Troy?
No, I'm not. I'm saying gay rights is gay rights. Gay men deserve to use the women's bathroom. Will he come out and say that?
You're losing me a little bit there, but okay. But let's pick it up, Howard. What about the other issues beyond the economy? How front and center or not do you expect them to be this week? Gay rights, gay marriage, women. Yep.
Yeah. In a word, not. In a word, not. I mean, the contrast culturally between the Republican and the Democratic Party, I think, is clear to everybody at this point. Demographically, culturally, et cetera. I use the term multicultural. I mean, you wouldn't hear, you didn't hear that word in Tampa. And you probably won't hear it here either, from the podium.
Though here you see it on the floor in much greater population than you did in Tampa, I have to say. They had all kinds of color, but on the floor, not so much.
Not on the floor. It was all on the podium. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to hear from the podium any full-throated defenses of gay marriage, even though the president has said that he personally supports it and so forth. I just don't think that's what this convention needs to be about. The president is in the race of his life. The polls are tied in the horse race nationally in the popularity contest. The president still has an easier route to 270 in the Electoral College. But if you step back and look at it, Mitt Romney, for all of his mistakes, for all his woodenness, he's not a very great candidate as a candidate. He's made lots of mistakes, didn't have a great convention. He's right there. And if the president's going to win, he needs the turnout of his people, his coalition, and he needs enough of those swing voters I was talking about to barely make it through in states like Ohio. If he doesn't get them, he's going to lose, and that's what he's got to focus on at this convention.
Let's get a call from Buffalo, New York. Neelam is calling. Hi, Neelam. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I was going to comment about a previous caller that said that Romney is promising jobs, not unemployment benefit. Mm-hmm. And I've been through that. I'm much better off today than I was 4 years ago. I lost my job 4 years ago, December of 2008. And I found a job 6 months later. I had just given birth. I was just out of my maternity leave, and I still decided to go for it. I didn't want to be home with a baby. I mean, I did, but I wanted to get back to the workforce. So, I got back up. I started looking for a job, and that tough market, it took me 6 months to get a job. And I did. I did get a much better job, and I'm much happier today in that
So
job.
How do you think with that, Neelam, how do you think about these two parties and their two messages now?
Well, what we should, I think, challenge is the loopholes in the unemployment system, not the unemployment benefit system itself, because, even in the best economy, jobs don't come to you sitting on a platter. You still have to work for them, and while you work for them, you still need some support. So just making a statement that, unemployment benefit, everyone in this, in this country is exploiting it. That's just not true, because that's what held me for those 6 months when I left my baby home, with my mom, and I got out to get that job.
It was there for you. You got the job. That's a good story in the end. So here we are, Brian. In North Carolina itself, I think the latest polls show Mitt Romney a little up.
47-43.
47-43. It's been neck and neck, but it's been tighter than that. I mean, Mitt Romney didn't get a huge bump last week, but the president's not in a very comfortable position here either.
Well, that's the thing. If you look back in the look at when Bill Clinton ran, roughly half the country, about 40%, was on one side. About 40% was on the other. There was about 20% or so in the middle
in play.
That you could mess with. And same with when Bush 41. It was about the same proportion. Today, that 40% is gone. It is almost evenly split, and that 20% of movable middle now like 5-6% if you're lucky. So this campaign is going to be, one, a base play. You saw last week with Mitt Romney speaking to his base.
Yeah.
And some of that will happen here this week. But it'll also be a fight over the slivers. The slivers of the population, whether it's soccer moms or NASCAR dads or Cuban voters in Florida or peanut farmers in Georgia or blacks or Latinos or the LGBT community, those slivers will move the needle. And those slivers will make a difference when that middle is so small.
Can he play to the base and bring in those slivers? Can he fire up the enthusiasm, Republican enthusiasm, higher than Democrats at this point, and bring in that little swing vote that matters so much, Margaret?
Certainly he'll try, and you do this with a mix of surrogates and ads and your own presence and speeches. But it's somewhat instructive that this, when he arrives, will be the first time he's been back in North Carolina since April.
And he needs North Carolina, or sure would like to have it.
He'd like it. His own campaign manager, Jim Messina, says Mitt Romney needs North Carolina more than President Obama does, that they still have a path without it. But they're not conceding it, at least not officially. They say that they still think they can win it. But their time on the ground, their investment shows they've been more focused on other states.
We're going to be right here in Charlotte all week long, morning, noon, and night. It's great to have all three of you with us today. Margaret Tollett with Bloomberg News, White House correspondent. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Brian Monroe with CNNPolitics.com. Great to have you.
Always a pleasure.
Howard Fineman at AOL Huffington Post. Great to have you, Howard. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. It was fun. Thank you.
This is On Point.